Welcome to Palmetto Scene's look into intimate partner violence. Over the next several weeks, a series of podcasts will be released diving into one of the largest issues pressing the state of South Carolina. I'm your host, Katie Gear. Thank you for joining us today as we start our journey into looking at intimate partner violence and how it is affecting the state of South Carolina. Saying that it is affecting the state really means that many of the women and men that live in our state deal with this issue on a daily basis. I appreciate you taking the time to stop and listen to this, our very first podcast. So a little bit more about me. I have been here at ETV for almost 2 years, and advocating for awareness about partner violence is something I have long been passionate about. So when I saw the recent study released by the Violence Policy Center last year that ranked South Carolina as number 2 in the nation for women killed by men, I really wanted to pause and take an opportunity to look into why South Carolina is in such a position. Since we have been working on this series, a new study has been released by the same group that now ranks South Carolina in the top spot. This is the fourth time in 10 years we have held the number one spot. I'm joined for today's discussion by Brittany Braddock, and I will give her a chance to introduce herself.
Hi, my name is Brittany Braddock. I've just started here recently at ETV, and education about intimate partner violence is a subject very important to me, so I definitely appreciate the opportunity to come here and discuss it with you today, Katie.
First off, we'll be referring to the specific type of violence as intimate partner violence. Both of us have kind of already alluded to that. So for those that don't know, the abbreviation is IPV. And while it may sound strange, the terminology has shifted in order to let all relationship abuse fall under one single term.
Yes. In the past, it was called domestic violence, or CDV. It's how it's still most commonly referred to, and even though some of the interviews that are done for this series talk about CDV instead of IPV, they're interchangeable, and for the most part, IPV will be the standard.
Yeah. The change actually came when a new law was put into place in 2015, so just a little bit earlier this year. It strengthened the penalties and kind of really just rearranged the criminalization of IPV in the state of South Carolina. So we'll get into that more later, but basically the new term shifts from domestic, which limited the use of the term to those in a marriage or those who had kids or shared residence together. Basically, you had to have some sort of legal tie to the person. So under the new term, anyone in an intimate partner situation can be prosecuted under the new law if an abuse situation occurs. So today we're just going to start to scratch the surface of what IPV is and why you should care that it's happening in your state.
In 2014, the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence released statistics that nationwide 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner. That boils down to 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men nationally.
Goodness, that's such like a large number. I mean, you have to know someone with those type of statistics that's
Absolutely.
Been affected.
It's one of those situations where, you know, you're going into college and they say, look to your left and look to your right. And if those two people are women and you're a woman,
one of you is
statistically has dealt with this.
It's going to have that experience in your life. And
so
it's just really sad.
It's important to everyone.
Yeah.
I think it's the point.
It really should be. And actually in South Carolina, so the numbers here are going to be a little different than nationally, but it's still 1 out of every 4 women and 1 out of every 10 men have been in an abusive situation. So it's important for you to care as a listener about this subject because statistically speaking, like we just said, you know at least one person that has or will be affected. And maybe you're the one that's actually being affected by it. Maybe you're one of the statistics. So I hope you all stay tuned and listen to this series because we're going to be answering lots of questions and dealing with lots of different topics about how you can be better educated and more aware of this issue in the state. So in 2014, South Carolina saw 50 women killed by their intimate partner. This ranked us as number 2 in the nation for women killed by men, and we were just behind Alaska. The most recent study in 2015, which we've already kind of referred to, places South Carolina in the top spot. So now we have 57 women killed this past year. So that is an increase from the last year, and it's also boosted us to the first spot, which is the first spot you don't want to be in nationally. So the study actually also shows that 94% of the women who were killed by a man that they knew.
Out of those, a staggering 62% were intimate to some degree with their killer. And this sadly isn't shocking. to many who are familiar with the issue in the state. The Posting Courier, which is a Charleston-based online publication, reported that in the last 10 years, over 300 women have been murdered by an intimate partner in this state, which basically works out to a woman dying at the hands of a lover every 12 days for 10 years straight.
Goodness. Yeah, and even more staggering, ever since the year 2000, South Carolina has been in the top 10 most violent states for partner abuse. And while this podcast isn't exactly going to look specifically at gun use in IPV, it is important to note that over 70% of the IPV killings in 2012 in this state were with guns. And to kind of put that in a little bit more perspective, the national percent right now is around 50.
And lawmakers are looking to change the statistic with the new law in place. Gun rights can and will be revoked for certain levels of charges in IPV cases. There's a lifetime gun ban for those who are convicted of the worst offenses.
Yeah, and then the lesser ones, lesser by meaning they're not as violent and like physically harmful to the person, they can receive at a judge's discretion anywhere from 3 to 10 years.
For a gun ban?
Yes, for the gun ban.
Right. While we need the laws and the regulations and the gun bans, we need to provide a community and an open forum for people to feel comfortable coming forward and talking about their own past IPV, possibly, or talking about a current situation happening. We need it to be less stigmatized.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. Like, it needs to be talked about more, and that's kind of the point behind why we decided to do this podcast, is to get that conversation started, is to give you as a viewer tools to be able to use to recognize this in other people. And if you are affected by this currently, we hope to give you the tools to be able to get out of that situation when you're ready.
I remember listening to women in abusive relationships say, "He hit me one time when we were dating. Never did he physically assault me again, nor did he need to."
That's Nancy Barton. She is the director of Sister Care, which is a Columbia area women's shelter. She sat down with us to really dig deep into the plight of women in South Carolina and try to give you, the viewer, a better glimpse into what it is like for an abuse survivor.
I was so scared as soon as he would be threatening or intimidating. He didn't have to be physical with me. He could completely control me and overpower me by the way he looked or acted.
We spoke with Nancy Barton about the public perception of intimate partner violence.
I think maybe the average person on the street, when that individual hears domestic violence, they think physical assault, physical violence. And domestic violence really is a pattern of abusive behavior with intimate partners that is used to maintain or to gain power and control. And you'll be hearing that from lots of folks when talking about domestic violence. We believe the foundation is power and control. And the abusive behaviors can be economic, they can be emotional or verbal abuse, it can be sexual, spiritual, and of course physical. And we always include stalking as well as a part of domestic violence. But the tactics and efforts are really to intimidate, to coerce, to isolate, to threaten, to frighten, or terrorize.
Most women don't realize that abuse typically doesn't start with someone physically assaulting you.
But it so often starts out much more insidious and subtle, so that a lot of times we can be flattered and think I'm the only one, and that person is so interested in me and crazy about me. And it gradually becomes more and more intense until it becomes pretty pathological.
But what makes relationship abuse so easy to slip into?
Typically, not always, of course, very charming, charismatic, interested in us, wants to listen to us, and can be very kind and thoughtful, and who doesn't respond typically, you know, pretty positively to that sort of thing. And we're hoping if we're interested in this other person, that all of that's genuine and will be true behavior. And so because it is gradual, insidious, because when the first time you're talking with somebody, going out with somebody, they're not saying, I'm going to, in 9 months, be putting my hands around your throat. Mm-hmm. You don't see it necessarily. And what the research tells us and what our experience is, typically and generally, not always, but the point at which the physical abuse and extreme abuse occurs is after you're really committed to the relationship. So it's much more difficult to answer your question to break it off after you've had a child together, after you're living together, after you're married, after you're engaged. I've heard survivors say, we'd been together a number of years, he was in the military, it wasn't until we moved to Germany that the abuse and violence occurred. So when it seems that person is really hooked into, locked into the relationship, and then it's much harder, I think, a lot of times to leave, mm-hmm. particularly if the abusive person says, I'll never do it again, I'll see our pastor, I'll go to counseling. They're very, contrite, apologetic, and they say exactly what we want to hear. And boy, is that effective, and it works time and time again. It's about that person, that survivor's behavior, what they did or didn't do, and not assuming responsibility. And if you don't assume responsibility, you're not accountable. There's no need to change, nothing for you mm-hmm. to do. But that's a big part of the dynamic, and a significant part of something else we haven't talked about, the effectiveness of psychological or emotional or verbal abuse. In my experience, I just can't hardly think of an individual who's been physically abused who's not been psychologically mm-hmm. abused. And that psychological abuse, in our experience, is key to keeping that individual in the relationship. When he or she thinks she's the guilty party, she's done something wrong, she can remedy it, she needs to do something. He, if it's a male survivor, really needs to try harder and make a difference. So you take in after a long period of time. That is the course that not always do we see, but frequently we see. Now, listening to survivors who have endured some of the most severe and extreme and harsh violence, those individuals have said in some of the literature, I'm looking at battered women who kill their abusers, show with that extreme and severe violence that it starts rapidly, mm-hmm. it starts soon, but so often it is the other, because it's more effective to mm-hmm. gradually have an impact on how you feel about yourself and start to question and be less confident and therefore more dependent on the abuser. So then you're stuck like glue mm-hmm. with that.
And
person.
Even after like a year, even years after you've left that person, if you get out of the relationship, how does that mental abuse stay with you?
Yes. If the individual hasn't received counseling or support or read or, as I talk about, done personal work, it's hard to see all aspects, because society questions the survivor. Why in the world would that person have stayed so long and put up with that? What? That person exposed their children to it? So there are explicit and implicit sort of messages in our culture that blame the victim survivor and question them. And we think one of the most harmful things that can be done to a survivor is to blame them, place responsibility on them. And what makes it so difficult to get out of an abusive relationship is if you are blamed mm-hmm. by society. And then you're ashamed mm-hmm. and you're embarrassed. And how many of us want to go tell our pastor, our coworkers, our supervisor, our sisters or fathers something you're so ashamed of mm-hmm. or embarrassed or humiliated about? But I have never forgotten. It's been years ago. I listened to a long-term director of a batterer intervention program, long established, and that director said, I think an abuser can take most any woman, and he said woman, and abuse that individual, and that individual become a victim because those abusers are so manipulative, they're so skilled, they know just what to do, it's so gradual, insidious. And that director was not blaming survivors or women, but he was talking about how it really can just about happen to anyone, and we don't necessarily see it coming.
But how do you protect yourself from becoming one of the 1 in 4 women in the state to be victims of IPV?
Certainly, if you sense that you don't have a say about yourself and your life, so that you feel and think you're being controlled in terms of how long it takes you to run to a convenience store or grocery store, or if the mileage on your vehicle is checked, or if the clothes you wear are being reviewed and evaluated, and free choice is feeling more and more restricted. So you're hearing comments like, why do you have to call your girlfriends and talk to them so often? I'm enough. I'm here for you. You sure seem close to your parents and your family. You've got to go over and see them. You need to stay at home.
Isolation
is, in my experience, one of the most common tactics, if not ever present throughout almost all cases we see. And I say it's a red flag when you're asking about signs. If there seems to be this obsessive, extreme jealousy and possessiveness.
And Nancy says that one of the biggest barriers is people not talking about their IPV experiences or being afraid to ask someone if they are safe within their relationship.
We get nearly as many, not as many, but nearly as many calls on our crisis line and our administrative office line from coworkers, family, friends of individuals in abusive relationships asking just what you're talking about. And you just have to have this other way of looking, that to intervene sometimes ends up being more dangerous for the survivor. I'm not saying not to intervene. I'll say some more, but we really sometimes have to be careful when neighbors call law enforcement comes. So often it is that survivor who takes the brunt later by the abuser, that abuser thinking that the survivor is the one that somehow called law enforcement and is going to really be punished for it. But some of the things we tell family, friends, neighbors, coworkers is, please don't give up on this person, because it's likely you're going to get frustrated. They're not going to perhaps take advice or leave right away. And to please be there for them, because there may very well come that day when the survivor is open to changes and options. So not to judge, to be available, not to blame. And also just not think you can walk in that person's shoes. It's too complicated. There are too many facets. You don't know if that survivor is not leaving the abusive relationship because the abuser has said, you will never see your children again. I'm taking them and I'm going out of the country. You may not know that, and you think, why doesn't that survivor just leave? And ain't no way she's going to leave if she thinks if she's going to lose her children. So to be there and be available and not give up.
And when many of us think of an abuse victim, we're very quick to question as to why they stayed or box them into some of the many stereotypes that people have for these victims.
And people are just very confounded about why they stay, but it's complicated, so I certainly give folks that. And then the stereotype it would never happen to me, and if it happens once, I am out of there. Mm-hmm. And I have talked to so many people who said that and say, it happened to me, and I absolutely didn't understand until I lived it.
So, as the number one state for men killing their partners, what can we do to change this culture of violence that so obviously exists mm-hmm. in the state of South Carolina? And will new laws be enough to change that culture of violence?
To change a culture takes time, takes generations. And when I talk about culture, I'm thinking about the way people hold their values, their beliefs, their own thinking about women, women's status, traditional sex role stereotypes, what it means to be a male, what it means to be a female. And in my way of thinking, if you're growing up in a violent home and there are 2, 3, 4 children exposed to this, are we not potentially increasing this problem exponentially by 2, 3, or 4 times? And absolutely, children growing up in violent homes do not always grow up to become perpetrators or victims or survivors, but we know it's the number one risk factor of who will be a battered individual or become a batterer.
In fact, according to Domestic Violence Roundtable, a community-based nonprofit committed to promoting healthy relationships, 3 to 4 million children between the ages of 3 and 17 are at risk of being exposed to intimate partner violence each year in the United States.
We believe that abuse, control, overpowering individuals is so often learned, not always, but learned in the home. And so if you say that, it follows that it can be unlearned. What some of the experts working with batterers say is, but beware, this is one difficult, recalcitrant group to be able to change. Don't want to give up hope. And there are certainly some good programs that try to make changes. Just heard a number of adults or children say, I grew up in a violent home. I had no idea that families were not like this until I had a sleepover, a slumber party, or I went to college, or lived or saw how other families lived, that putting your hands on someone is not a part of love.
In 2015, Governor Nikki Haley created a domestic violence task force to look into the issue facing South Carolina. Their report will be released at the end of the year.
I think things are looking more hopeful because we are taking this issue more seriously, it seems to me, but it really is going to make a difference, I think, come down to the nuts and bolts, the specifics, the details of that specific judge, law enforcement officer, clergy, doctor, nurse, educator, counselor, all the specifics of our community coming together, being trained, informed, and educated, and saying this is a social problem, this is a problem that affects me, it affects my pocketbook, it affects my safety because certainly bystanders are killed, and come up with a specific workable plan on a community-wide basis.
We would like to take this moment and provide you with some resources. If you need help or know someone who does, you can call the Hotline for Relationship Abuse through the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That number is going to be 1-800-799-7233. You can also visit our website, palmettoscene.org, to find more articles and resource tips.
And a lot of people are going to hear intimate partner violence, and they're going to think of it as a women's issue. And certainly, predominantly, the perpetrators are men and the victims are women. However, we would be remiss not to mention that so many victims of IPV are men.
It's still somewhere between 4 to 6% of those that report domestic violence that are men.
We spoke with Ruth Glenn of the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence on the phone about men also being victims of abuse.
So I will tell you, we believe that's a low number. But we will also tell you it's because men don't report as frequently or as readily as women do.
And in terms of resources for them to get help, it's a lot more difficult because when IPV is stigmatized for all parties, it's even more stigmatized for men because society is going to question their masculinity.
Look down on them.
But when you're in an abuse situation, I mean, you're so vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Your gender does not matter.
I think that's why it's so important to talk about domestic violence in the context of power and control versus battery versus physical abuse versus all of those types of abuse. Because then men would understand better why that's happening to them.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would remove the stigma of physical power over a woman. Because honestly, my personal belief is that a man that is being abused automatically thinks in his head, well, I'm bigger and I'm stronger. Why is this happening? Versus you've been manipulated, you've been controlled, those types of things.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's underreported, and I don't think we've heard enough from men.
But besides getting the conversation started to where men feel more comfortable broaching the subject, there are some men's groups working on raising awareness about men being victims, too.
I think that some men's groups are taking it on. We have to be very careful what men's groups are taking it on, because there are some men's groups that are not doing good work in that. The issues of patriarchy, whether we're talking about women as victims or men as victims, but when we're talking about domestic violence and the patriarchy that still exists in our society, we're probably not going to see that stigma removed.
And one of the most important things to remember is that as a victim, you're not alone and you're not at fault. Reaching out for help will be the first step in creating a new life for yourself. And if you're a friend or a family member of a victim, there's resources available to you as well.
If you need tips or resources, you should be able to find lots of information on our website that will point you in the right direction.
And again, that national helpline number is 1-800-799-7233.
Thank you for joining us for this week's Palmetto Scenes look into intimate partner violence in South Carolina. We hope that you will join us next week as we will be talking to Leslie Morgan Steiner.
I never thought I was a battered wife. I thought I was a strong, smart woman in love with a troubled man.
You may have heard of her book, Crazy Love, or seen her most recent TED Talk about her personal journey as an abuse survivor.
My isolation was broken, and I realized finally that I wasn't alone, that we all go through the same sort of experience as victims, and it was really empowering and wonderful for me to realize how similar we all are and what great company I'm in.
We'll also be talking about myths and misconceptions that people have about abuse victims and survivors. You really won't want to miss it.
As always, you can tweet us your thoughts on today's podcast, as well as questions for next week's. We would love to incorporate some of your feedback and some of your questions into the podcast as well. My Twitter is at Katie Geer, so that's KATIEGEERSCETV. So it's at Katie Geer, SCETV.
And mine is BBSCETV. Thank you again for tuning in today. We look forward to continuing this conversation on intimate partner violence for the next several weeks. Again, I'm Brittany Braddock.
And for Palmetto Scene, I'm Katie Geer. Thanks for joining us.